Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The days are dim right now for a lot of folks, but I firmly believe tomorrow is going to be brighter. And I thank you for having that resiliency and that and that drive to hang in there and help this economy grow and recover. God bless you.
I've spent my entire adult life in service to AIG, and I am heartbroken as to what has happened. I hope to see the company and indeed the entire global economy emerge from this crisis.
In 2000, you received over $52 million. In 2001, that increased to $98 million. And then in 2005, you took home $89 million. In 2006, you made a huge stock sale, and you received over $100 million in that year alone. That's almost half a billion dollars. And that's difficult to comprehend for a lot of people. Your company is now bankrupt. Our economy is in a state of crisis. But you get to keep $480 million. I have a very basic question for you. Is this fair?
I would say to you the 500 number is not accurate. I would say to you that although it's still a large number, I think for the years that you're talking about here, I believe my cash compensation was close to $60 million, which you have indicated here. And I believe the amount that I took out of the company over and above that was...
Took out of the company.
I believe a little bit less than $250 million.
Took out of the company. Step right up, ladies and gentlemen. In the center ring. In the center ring, we have George Bush, maestro of the circus. In the left ring, we have Nostrilman, Henry Waxman, putting on a big front, even though he took plenty on the schmear job. In the right ring, we have nobody in the right ring to hang him high. I turn it off already. So yesterday it was Lehman Brothers. The guy said he can't sleep at night. He can't sleep at night. You hear? $480 million over something, and he can't sleep at night. And we're supposed to feel sorry. Today, a guy gets up from AIG, who busted out the company, again, like a sporting goods store in The Sopranos. But he has a British accent, you see. Don't assume it's all, you know. Listen to the British guy now with the Australian accent. I want to hear him again from AIG, whose heart was broken.
I've spent my entire adult life in service to AIG, and I am heartbroken as to what has happened. I hope to see the company and, indeed, the entire global economy emerge from this crisis.
Yeah, all right. Tell your story, Walkin' Johnson, and put on a pair of striped pants on the way into the ball and chain. We're taking away your assets, your wife's assets, your grandmother's assets, your grandfather's assets, your granddaughter's assets. We're taking away your jets. We're taking away your yachts. We're taking it all away. You're not even going to have a coupon to Outback when we get through with you. Nothing, zero. No one's paying a dime. This is all a sham. You know, in the ex-Soviet Union in the 50s, they had what were known as show trials, where they pretended to have a trial when, in fact, the people were already guilty before they stepped into the courtroom. And they were usually executed. The Nazis also had show trials where they brought people in for an alleged trial, but they were already guilty. This is the reverse. We have, in this country, the reverse of the Soviet era show trials. We have, in essence, a public hearing, which appears to be getting at the truth, but it's a show trial nevertheless, because all of them are going to be found innocent. And they're going to say, well, make sure this never happens again. We're going to close it this and that and door and that. Oh, God. I was reading a story connected to this about prostitution, the recession-proof career, making a comeback amongst middle-class women. It says, from young New York women seeking to sell themselves to wealthy businessmen, to people offering cheap rentals in return for benefits, to rural Kentuckians trading sex for gas, the news over the last few months has been full of sordid tales of women deciding to turn to prostitution as a means of dealing with inflation. And this was from WalletPop.com. And I looked at it and I said, you know, is this true? And they talk about three acquaintances in New York City who have chosen to become high-priced call girls. Nobody would ever know. They say they're polished, well-educated, intelligent women who are working their way up in their chosen professions, and they don't fit any of the traditional prostitution narratives. And what's fascinating to me is whether or not this is true. Part of the seduction of prostitution is the easy money and the easy access to luxuries. But they open the article of how a society can change its morals almost at the drop of a hat. They say, for example, Weimar Germany, which I've referred to many times. I know you want to talk about McCain. Leave me alone. It's over. He's going to thank Obama. He's going to say what a wonderful guy he is. It's over. He can't save his presidency. He cannot save his campaign. He doesn't have it in him. He has no fire in his belly. He has mayonnaise in his belly. He has white bread and mayonnaise in his belly. He doesn't have fire in his belly. He hasn't eaten a spice in 71 years. He has no fire in his belly. And so it's over. Get ready for the socialist slash communist slash Afro-Leninist regime of Obama. So I'm going to go to what I want to talk about. In Weimar, Germany, which was devastated by the worldwide financial collapse of the 1930s, and this is Germany, saddled with an insurmountable war debt from World War I, Germany then became a moral wasteland. And as fortunes crumbled and the future seemed hopeless, they say that the basic rules governing social interaction evaporated, and Berlin became a destination for sex tourists, not unlike today's Bangkok. And businessmen came from around the world and used their vastly inflated home currencies to buy the affections of upstanding middle-class women who turned to prostitution as a means of making ends meet. From matrons to schoolgirls, women from every walk of life and every level of society demonstrated that in the end there is one commodity that never loses its value, he writes. Now, I'm not saying we're there yet, but I'm seeing a trend according to certain, you know, dribbles here and there that this is happening here. Professional women are on the side prostitutes. So Mike Savage now opens up the lines to women who can put a handkerchief over the mouthpiece of their telephones and call 1-800-449-8255 and tell us if, in fact, yes, I have become a prostitute as a result of the downturn in the economy. I need to do it to pay the rent, or I need to do it to pay the tuition, or I need to do it to pay for my child's dental work or for my child's Ritalin. Because I'm not interested in talking about the criminals on Wall Street who have bought and sold the interrogators in Congress who, as you well know, are not going to do anything to them. None whatsoever. 1-800-449-8. If you don't want to talk about prostitution and no prostitutes call me, I understand. You want to pretend that you... We don't have to do that. So we'll talk about the ordinary. We'll go to the bread and potato, the meat and potato, boring show. Here's a meat and potato story for the show. Will McCain fight back hard enough tonight at the debate? Answer, no. Of course he won't. He's going to get up there and he's going to thank Chaim Yankel, and I want to thank you. I want to thank him. I want to thank you. I want to thank him. I want to thank you, and I want to thank the ladies and gentlemen from Kentucky, and I want to thank the microphone. I want to thank the best boy. I want to thank the worst boy. I want to thank the guy with the technical in the... And he won't say a word. People will start squirming before he says a word. And then he wants to thank Obama for being on the other side of the stage and having gotten so far. He dresses nicely. He's clean cut. And I want to thank him. I'm proud of you and you and your wife. And I wish you very well. And I'm quitting tonight. And I'm leaving for Mongolia, where I bought a Kia dealership. And that's it. Then my wife's going to have a little beer distributorship on the side. We're going to sell yak meat, yak burgers. We're going to have yak burgers, a Kia dealership, and that's it. And good night and good luck. So what do you want me to do? You want me to get upset over this? The crooks are getting up there laughing at us. The Australian crook got up today and said he's heartbroken. He's heartbroken about the company. They sacked it. Hey, did you hear about Lehman Brothers? That was yesterday's hearing. Layman, well, if I, it says Layman sought millions for executives. Okay, that's on michaelsavage.com, linked up from Newsmax. But if you read the whole article, you see the Bush connection to Lehman Brothers. Oh, yeah, you didn't know that. I had to read the whole story to get to a Bush connection. But here it is, because you're not going to believe what I'm about to tell you. Waxman said it in January, Mr. Fold, he was the doll from yesterday. He was the villainous doll from yesterday with the wonderful persona. Great, great persona he had. No arrogance in Mr. Fold. In January, Mr. Fold and his board were warned the company's liquidity can disappear quite fast. Despite that warning, he said, Mr. Fold depleted Lehman's capital reserves by over $10 billion through year-end bonuses, stock buybacks, and dividend payments. Now, let me pause. They were warned the company was going to sink. Fold gave out $10 billion as fast as he could. Waxman quoted Fold as saying in one document, "Don't worry," to the suggestion that executives go without bonuses. Don't worry. That suggestion, wait, now here it comes. Here's the punchline. That suggestion of don't worry came from Lehman's money management subsidiary, Neuberger Berman. Waxman quoted George H. Walker, President Bush's cousin and a Lehman executive who oversaw some Neuberger Berman employees, as responding with a dismissive tone to the idea of going without bonuses. He wrote to the executive committee, according to Waxman, "Sorry, team. I'm not sure what's in the water at 605 Third Avenue today. I'm embarrassed and I apologize." Fold said in his statement that the company did everything it could to limit its risks and save itself. Well, then why did he give away $10 billion through year-end bonuses, stock buybacks, and dividend payments when he saw the ship going down? Don't worry. Everything will be okay. The jet's fueled. We got a separate house in Switzerland with a new identity card. Don't worry. Then we have today this guy, Martin Sullivan, who was AIG chairman from 05 to 08. He bailed just before it all went under. And he says he was heartbroken about the failure of his former company. But later on, the former AIG CEO, the same Martin Sullivan, who's now heartbroken, defends his compensation. According to the Washington Post, AIG Insurance lost over $5 billion in the last quarter of 07 due to its risky financial products division. Risky, in other words, risky behavior, Waxman said, lost $5 billion, okay, in one quarter. Yet in March of 08, when the company's compensation committee met to award bonuses, Chief Executive Martin Sullivan urged the committee to ignore those losses, which should have slashed bonuses. And the board agreed to ignore the losses from the financial products division and gave Sullivan a cash bonus of over $5 million. The board also approved a new compensation contract for Sullivan that gave him a golden parachute of $15 million. Now, what I would do is I'd bring in the compensation board, and if they're doing what I think they're doing because they were paid by the same guy, they should be hung. There should be a capital punishment for what these thieves and crumbs did. They're making people commit suicide all across America. And yet, listen to what Sullivan said today about his being heartbroken when it turns out he got a $15 million golden parachute on top of a $5 million bonus, on top of giving away $5 billion in the last quarter. Listen to this crumb bum.
"I've spent my entire adult life in service to AIG, and I am heartbroken as to what has happened. I hope to see the company and indeed the entire global economy emerge from this crisis."
Mm-hmm. Well, if we had a sane government, handcuffs and marshals, Waxman would have said, "Marshals, please step forward and slap Mr. Sullivan in handcuffs," and that would have been it. I mean, America's screaming for justice. America's screaming for a pair of handcuffs on one of these silk-tongued phonies. I'll be right back.
Savage.
We got cartoons on the website today on michaelsavage.com. We got new cartoons. Stocks go down 500 points. There are down 800 since the guy who needs a shave, Bernanke, Barbasol. He should be in a barrel with suspenders, forced to stand outside the Holland Tunnel with a begging cup for a month. Him and there's another article, Goldman Sachs taps Goldman Sachs to bail out Goldman Sachs. In other words, whenever they run out of money, they come up with a dramatic new short-term solution with another fiduciary instrument that didn't exist yesterday. They make up a new fiduciary instrument, and they do exactly what they did to melt down the economy to begin with. They sold mortgages that nobody wanted with new and this and that and this and this and derivative. A derivative of a derivative of a derivative is still a pile of crap. And then the other guy says, I don't want the grade Z crap, B crap. Sell me the grade A crap. That I can sell. You don't want some of the B? No, you hold the B crap. I'll sell the triple A crap. Who's going to buy it? We'll buy it. But you said you're going to sell it. Yeah, but we have another division of the company that'll buy it. Then after they buy it, we'll sell them the B, and they'll take it on a lower, higher interest rate so we can keep churning. And while we churn, we can earn. In order to earn, we got to churn. So we keep churning with new fiduciary crap. So today, Goldman Sachs tapped Goldman Sachs to bail out Goldman Sachs. Massive amounts of short-term debt, known as crap, in a dramatic effort to break through a credit clog. What credit clog? What credit clog? The country was running on a house of cards. What are you talking about? Lehman stole $10 billion for execs as company was going under is a headline on my website. That's a little harsh. That's not polite. That's not really right. That's so harsh. That is so unmedia-like. Iceland teeters on brink of bankruptcy. Iceland, of all places. A little island near the Arctic Circle is about to become the first national bankruptcy of the global meltdown. You say, well, what does it matter? Because Iceland was a poor country until the mid-90s when they developed a whole new game, and they became so rich on a house of cards that the Icelanders started to buy homes in Miami to get away from the ice. Then they bought houses in Boca Raton to get away from Miami. And then to get away from Boca Raton, they bought condominiums in Fort Lauderdale to see the topless women from France. They didn't know what to do with their money, so they bought businesses all over the world. So if they go bankrupt in Iceland, they nationalize the only bank, the big bank. Then all the businesses they bought in England and France and America will also go bankrupt. It's unbelievable. Sitting here watching it go around and around. I'm going to talk about personal responsibility in my generation, in my father's generation. How it was drummed into me, personal responsibility, and how these yuppie scum, these yuppie slime, have no personal responsibility, with the yuppie slime in the government having no personal responsibility. Yes, I have personal responsibility. When things failed in my life, I picked myself up by my bootstraps. The government stole my manhood from me, or tried to give the job to an unqualified minority or an unqualified woman. They almost ripped my heart out, but instead of rolling over and dying, I came back, and here I am.
Savage.
I pledge allegiance to the stock of Goldman Sachs of Wall Street. And to the gang for which it stands, one gang, indivisible, with liberty and profits for them.
That's the new Pledge of Allegiance for the old United States of America. It's now the pledge to Goldman Sachs. Today, Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson chose another Goldman Sachs crony, Neil Cash and Carry, to distribute money from the bailout to whoever he wants. Now, why should Paulson, a former Goldman Sachs CEO, be allowed to hire Cash and Carry, a former Goldman Sachs executive, to distribute taxpayer money to, among others, Goldman Sachs? That's why my article on michaelsavage.com is Goldman Sachs chooses Goldman Sachs to bail out Goldman Sachs. And Bush tells us things are tough. He knows, he heard about gas. The gas is up, he heard. He heard somewhere that people buy gas in a machine that they pump, and he heard that the numbers are higher than he once saw them, and he knows they're bad, and people don't feel good, and it's serious, and he's getting ready to enjoy Texas, and he bought a new axe to grind, and he's going to be down there cutting wood before he runs back to New England. As soon as he's through with the presidency, they sell the ranch in Texas because they used it to schmuck out the Rubes. The Rubes thought he was from Texas. He's moving right back to Connecticut, as soon as the Greenwich, and buying a new house. And he's giving a lecture tour on famous speeches of American presidents. So I asked you about prostitution running rampant. Is it? I've asked if you're a prostitute on the sly to call the show. I know many of you are who listen because you gave money to the Republican Party and also to the Democrat Party. So everyone who did is already a prostitute since they don't represent anything but their own party. But aside from that, I'm talking about physical, actual physical. There's other stuff. I'll get to it later. I'm warming up for the McCain thing later. I can't wait. I mean, I'm going to watch it for 5 minutes. I don't care anymore. I'm immune. I'm indifferent. I'm blasé. I don't care. You know what it is? It's like watching a major earthquake occur in slow motion. The trick is to avoid being pulled into a fault line and disappearing. Now, how do you do that exactly? That's for you to worry about. Don't ask me. Ask CNBC. They know what they're talking about. They know which way their bread is buttered. Whatever executive they have on, they want to make sure their guy looks good when he leaves. You know, CNBC, MSNBC, MSLVGT, LGBT, MSLGBT, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transsexual, Microsoft, MSLGBT. What that channel has become, me. And then they have the brown shirt on with them to make it look like balanced, unfair and imbalanced. They have LSBGT and the brown shirt. The only thing is the uniform doesn't fit anymore. Got stuck behind the rotating wall in Maspeth. So you don't know what I'm... Half the time, I don't think you know what I'm mumbling to myself now. Why should I get worked up over Wall Street? The government's not protecting us. If they were, these guys would be in prison. We were reading this in, like, prison diaries, not in a suit and tie. It's heartbroken over the failure. The other one can't sleep at night. You'd think there'd be one honest congressman who gets up and says, you're going to jail. Nobody, nothing. Can you tell us, sir, how this happened and how we can avoid it in the future? Sure, I can tell you how to avoid it in the future. Take away his assets, take away the houses, take away the planes, the cars, go into the family's business, take away the wife's money, the children's money, take the children out of school, put the daughters in sackcloth, and send them away for 99 years. That is a very good deterrent. I mean, if a black kid sells crack 3 times, he goes away for life in California, right? But if this guy robs the country 35,000 different ways to Sunday, he says he's heartbroken and that's good enough. You wonder why there's a division in the country. You wonder why there's discontent. You wonder why there's racial disparity in the country. You wonder, you wonder, you wonder. I don't wonder so much. Indiana, Joe, you're on the Savage Nation.
Joe. I'd like to comment it's just so refreshing that you speak your mind, and even when someone else calls in to try to have a retort, you stand your ground, and you just don't hear that very often anymore. Usually someone will try to, oh, well, I see where you're coming from. Or,
oh, right, right. I'm so understanding of your position. I didn't see it that way, but now I do.
Exactly.
Yes, Mr. AIG, you're heartbroken. We didn't see it your way. We can understand where you're coming from. I'm okay, you're okay.
Speaking of
IIG. I'm okay, you're not okay. My position is very simple. I'm okay and you're wrong until proven otherwise. Every caller to this show is guilty and proven. Every caller to this show is guilty and wrong until proven. Why do I feel good? Something's wrong with me. I don't understand this. I shouldn't feel good today. I don't know. Who knows? Who could figure these things out? A little chemical, biological. Chembio, biochemical. I love a story I put up on michaelsavage.com that the geniuses in science think they may have a relationship between moods and creativity. Ooh, that's Nobel-level science. Really? Creative people are moody? Ooh. Watch out for the even-tempered guys in corporate America. You know, there's nobody more dangerous, I found in my life, than normopaths, because usually they're drugged out of their gourd on prescription medication. They get shaved 4 times a day in the corporate barber chair. The barber comes into their office to make sure not a hair isn't out of place, to the point where there's no hair on their head anymore. And everything is immaculate. The more immaculate, usually, the more dirty they are inside, I discovered. The more immaculate, the more they pay attention to every hair, every dust particle, a dot on their shirt, the more corrupt they are, I've discovered. I don't know how it works, but there's something to do with excessive cleanliness and attention to that kind of level and Nazism of the mind. In other words, when you look at pictures of World War II and you see them in the boss uniforms, the Nazis had it like they went to boss, I think. He made them the suits. But the Nazi officers were dressed clean as a whistle. Millions were tortured and killed in chambers and shot. But the officers were as clean as America's corporate executives. You understand what I am saying to you? No one wants to talk about prostitution. I can't wait to see McCain tonight Hello, I want to thank you. I want to thank Kentucky personally. You're not in Kentucky, sir. That was last year. Well, wherever we are, I want to thank everybody personally. I want to thank Millie that I met today. I want to tell you a story about Millie that I met today in the haberdashery. I went over to the haberdashery. It was out of business. It was boarded up. I understand things are tough. And Millie said to me, she's in a credit crunch. And Millie, they always give you a name you never heard of. That's a new thing they think is so electrifying that you're going to relate to it. Who teaches them these techniques? All right, when you get up there, what you do is, here's you're going to talk about a lady you met today in a diner who was suffering from a terrible disease, whose child was run over recently by a truck, and how you feel her pain, and how you're going to help her when you become president. All right, make up a name. What community are we in? If we're in a Polish community, she has a Polish name, Jewish community, Jewish name, Boger. Down the list. No one believes any of it. We all know it's fraudulent. It's as fraudulent as derivatives on Wall Street. Look what our country's come down to, that the choice is between the marathon man and the fraud. The marathon man and the invented candidate are running against each other. No, they can't save us from anything. Nothing. Impossible. We all know it, too, in our hearts. It's like the Exxon Valdez already went into, dropped the oil already into Prudhoe Bay, and now the captain was drunk, and another dyslexic on top of it all, didn't know what he was doing. He feels your pain, he's leaving, he can't wait to get back to Texas and cut wood. And then they bring in another two. Here's your choices of captain. We got a guy who never steered a ship before from Chicago, and then we got a guy who's so old he doesn't know where the steering wheel is. San Francisco, Rick, you're on the Savage Nation. Rick, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hello, Dr. Savage. It's a pleasure talking to you. And
good. Don't say honor. Say pleasure. The honor you can save for the golfer, not for me. I don't need honor. Go ahead. What else is I going to
like? Okay, it's a pleasure. Dr. Savage, you don't know how rampant this prostitution is around San Francisco area where I live. Me as a young man in my early 30s, you know, I go out and try to meet girls and things like that that are single, and it's just amazing when you meet these girls because the prostitution isn't so blatant as it is more like they want you to buy them stuff, but they ask you in a very prostitutional way.
Wait. I'm mixing. You mean they're not actual prostitutes, but the minute you meet a girl, she says, buy me a pair of Manalo shoes?
No. Nothing like that, Dr. Savage. It's not where they're asking for, you know, like a girlfriend, a boyfriend type situation. They almost treat you as if you're just John, another guy, or whatever.
Hold on. You're in San Francisco. When you say meet them, where do you meet them? In a bar or where?
Bars. These girls that you see, they look. They say they're school teachers and librarians. I mean, they're your typical.
But are they prostitutes? But Rick, are they working girls, so to speak, prostitutes?
Yes, they are.
They are. So are they asking you for an hourly amount of money, or what are they saying to you?
They don't ask you until probably into the second date out, and then it always seems to come out in some way. Like I had a girl over the weekend who asked me, she said, I said, why don't you come over? And she made a joke. She goes, well, that's going to cost you. And I go, what? What did you say? And she said, oh, no, I'm just kidding. But she had made that joke numerous times.
Rick, hold it. I'm not following you. You're going to just what? Regular bars in San Francisco? Where in what district? In the Richmond district?
No, Marina.
Marina, where the girls jog with the run continuously looking for a husband they can't find. They're always running.
Right.
Exactly. They're running and no one's looking at them. Five out of 10 men are gay, and the other five are either married or crazy. So that's 10 out of 10 they can't find anybody.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. And
then they wind up moving to Los Angeles or Peoria after 6 months of looking for a man here. But you're saying before they leave for Peoria, they become a hooker?
Well, no, sir. I think it's more rampant in the whole United States rather than just San Francisco. I think it's
not generalize. Come on. We live in a pretty crazy city.
Yes.
Well, when you go up to them in a bar, you say, hi, you're like an average nice-looking guy, but you date them, and then right away it's money?
Yeah, within a couple dates. And then there was another time while I was going to college a couple years ago, and a lot of the girls there were absolutely trying to pay and make their way through tuition by prostitution. And they wouldn't really call it prostitution. What they would say is they're going to parties. They would
have
lingerie parties for guys and come over to the house and that kind of thing. And, you know,
Well, I didn't grow up in that time. I mean, we didn't have that that relationship with young ladies in my day. It was a different world. I mean, we actually had to date the girl, you know, and then, you know, it was usually try to get serious before. I never heard of money transferred for sex in my day. I mean, unless you went to a prostitute, which I didn't know anyone who did. I did. I knew one kid who did. He went to a military academy. Apparently, he was from Venezuela. They all went to military. Anyone from military academy went to prostitutes. In their country, I think that's what they do when they're 15. But I never knew any American guys who went to prostitutes as youngsters. So, who knows? I'm reading this on a law. Where is the story? Where is it? I lost the story already. Oh, we got one who was a pro. Now, Debbie, do you have a... Okay, Debbie on WR, welcome to the show. You claim you were in this business?
Yes, sir.
Now, are you being leveling with me, or are you going to just pull my leg?
No, sir. I was a former working girl in the New York area.
Were you driven into it out of destitution, or were you forced into it through immigration, through an immigration ring?
No, it was destitution. I had lost my job, and picked up the paper, and there were articles in the paper, and actually the New York Village Voice for escorts, and I got involved and made a lot of money, a lot of money.
And how did you, okay, let's start from the back end. How'd you get out?
I got arrested, and it made me sit and think, and...
So now you have a regular job. I'm not going to ask you what it is, obviously, but did you have to get a regular job?
I had to, yes.
All right. So you went from making $500 an hour, $300 an hour, to making $500 a week?
Yes. Essentially, yes.
All right. Now, before you became a working girl, a prostitute, you were a single woman?
Single with children.
Oh, with children. So you became desperate and you had to pay bills. So... You said, you know what? I'll do what other people have done. This is a profession, so to speak, that has never gone away. That was the article talked about that, which is that it's been going on from forever, and any time the economy gets bad, women will do this. How did you feel doing it? Did you feel degraded?
Yeah, very much. Very much. But
I mean, each time you did it, inside you felt like you were dying?
I felt horrible about it, but the money made me just forget about the pain. I made so much money. It just made me forget.
How much did you make?
I made hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars a day.
And, of course, your children know nothing of this.
No, not until I got arrested.
Oh, then they found out. Okay, but this is a whole different world now. Now you're a regular working person in the sense of a regular job. Would you do it again if you went broke and had to?
No, never.
Why? Why not?
Because I almost got beat up. In one situation, someone threatened to kill me, but it proved that I was stronger and quicker than him, and I was able to escape. I saw my friends get thrown out in the middle of the night in the street naked. I could tell you so many stories,
Do any of them work for NBC? Any of the women thrown out naked in the night? They work for NBC during the day?
Well, actually, we had a lot of very sophisticated women with educations that did work at night and went about their normal course of business in the daytime.
Debbie, hold on, because I have been reading articles on some websites that there are women who actually are married with children. The husband doesn't even know they're doing this. Did you encounter any women in that category?
I knew plenty.
Oh, my God. Then, I read another article of younger women in their 20s, 25, 26, who date regular guys like they're looking for a husband, who are hookers on the side, and they don't even know the guys who date them don't even know that they're hookers on the side. And with the guys, the young guys, they act coy. They make them go out 3, 4, 5 times, and they don't even have any sex with them. Have you heard about any of those?
Yes. I knew several women that actually had pimps, and they worked for the escort agencies,
Hold on. Would you stay on the line? Because to me, this is directly connected to the economy. I'll be right back. Savage. back to these other stories. Homeless are being driven to vote for Obama. That came out. Soup kitchens, drug rehab centers are being driven to polling booths. The big story about Acorn, you know about that. Acorn already, you know, more bogus Obama donors surface. All of that stuff. But since we're talking about prostitutes in high places, we'll talk about prostitutes in low places. Debbie in New York was in the biz. Debbie, welcome back. So who was the most astonishing hooker that you ever met in the sense of what she did in her regular life and no one knew about it, but the girls who worked?
She was a school teacher. And another one I knew was an RN. And I couldn't understand why they were in such high, lofty positions in the daytime and then would come out and do this at night. But the bottom line is that they were druggies, and they were doing it for the because all the Johns would, you know, wanted you to get high with them.
Well, the client, it's a horrible story, Debbie, but I thank you for exposing this part of your sordid past on the Savage Nation. I only wish that the corporate executives who were being grilled would come as clean as you just did on the Savage Nation. We all understand that they're worse than any prostitute that you probably ever met in this country, these CEOs, because at least the prostitute gives men something for their money, whereas the corporate prostitutes give nobody anything. They rob from everybody. But they feel it in their heart. They're heartbroken for what was done. In the next hour, we're going to talk about McCain versus Obama. All right. Will McCain fight back hard enough tonight at the debate? Duh. You must be joking. Which McCain are you talking about? It's terrible to think. People are talking about leaving the country if the other one wins. If the socialist slash communist slash Afro-Leninist wins, people are talking about selling their property and leaving America. But where are they going to move? Tell me where they're going to move to. And what do they fear in Obama? What do you fear about an Obama win? Tell me what you most fear if Obama wins. That's what I want to hear. What do you most fear if Barack Hussein Obama wins?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
My entire adult life in service to AIG, and I am heartbroken as to what has happened. I hope to see the company and indeed the entire global economy emerge from this crisis.
And again, not that anybody on this committee cares about this, but I wake up every single night thinking, what could I have done differently? And it's been going on. What could I have done differently? In certain conversations, what could I have said? What should I have done?
All right, we heard it earlier. I tell you a story, Walking Johnny. Play some music right now. I got to get into the show. I can't even listen to these people, for God's sakes. Anything. I don't care what you do. That's good. Now you're talking.
Somewhere beyond the sea.
I'm going to use some French. The best veal in the city. Do you mind if I talk French?
My lover stands on golden sand.
N'importe où dehors du monde. Where I feel right now. And believe me, it's not for the veal parmesan. N'importe où dehors du monde. Is there another world I can go to, another planet, where man is not as fetid as a rotten orchid?
If I could fly like
I'm going to go to the Orchid Society meeting tonight. I'm going to get back into what I really love, what I used to love, plants and people. I'll get into orchids, I'll get back into medicinal plants, I'll pull down my botanical cap, disappear from the world. No one will ever hear of me, and I'll just... You know why I originally went into botany before I became a talk show host? Was to get away from human beings, because the world of plants is very interesting. Of course, it's as competitive as humans are. Plants are as competitive as man. It's just they move at a slower pace, so you don't see it. But even if you have a home garden, you know that. One tries to take away the other's sunlight, so the other one digs under the ground and takes away its root. Then the other one comes in with a virus, and the other one gives it a bug. It's called the law of the jungle. So when you watch these predators from Wall Street, what you're watching is the aborigines, so to speak, of the jungle, the throwbacks. The more polished they are, the cleaner they are, the more of an aborigine they are in the sense of being predatory and more of a throwback without a scintilla of civility, without a scintilla of man's developed conscience. And that's where a government comes in. A government is supposed to control this predatory behavior, aren't they? Isn't a government supposed to protect the people? Let's start with the fundamental basis of a government is to protect the people. So while they were telling you to fear Osama bin Laden, their friends were robbing you blind on Wall Street with false fiduciary instruments and selling crap under the guise of derivatives. And they were trading it to each other because every time they traded, they make money on it. It didn't matter that there was nothing fundamentally there. So now you say, okay, the government's going to step in. So who's the government? Goldman Sachs. And so who's Goldman Sachs bailing out? Goldman Sachs. And who do they choose to devolve to take the $700 billion or $800 billion we gave them last week? An executive from Goldman Sachs to make sure that only Goldman Sachs survives. Oh, man, how could this be happening in front of our eyes? Are we that stupid? Are you that stupid that you don't see that Paulson is the arch fiend of all fiends? Don't you see what's going on in front of your eyes? That's how I see it. It's one man's opinion. I have no evidence that he's dishonest or a dirty crook. But I feel it. I feel it in my heart that the whole thing is so rotten that only a special order of God himself can save this country. You're telling me I'm supposed to watch the debate tonight. Oh, if only McCain wins, all is well. And if Obama wins, all is lost. I know many people feel that way who listen to this show. So what do you fear should Obama win? I want to know what you fear the most. That's what I want to know, what you fear the most. I'm going to tap into your fears. That's right. I'm tapping into the fears of this show. I am going to ask you what you fear the most from Obama winning. Because it looks to me that this old man, this geezer, cannot get out of his own way. I'm sorry. You don't want to hear it? You want me to promote him? Get another one to promote him because you're not going to get me to promote this one. No, sir. Not this kind of campaign. And I'll tell you other reasons. Forget about not coming on the show. Who cares about that? I could care less whether the geezer appears. Well, I'm going to hear platitudes anyway, so what do I need him on the show for? It's going to make my life? What, are you people crazy? You think that's the reason I don't support McCain? I certainly don't support the Afro-Leninist. I certainly do not support him. That doesn't mean I automatically have to support the other guy. You understand? So what do you fear? Waco, Texas. Ellen, what do you fear if Obama wins?
Dr. Savage, I fear the loss of religious freedom and a gradual creep towards just a crackdown on all freedom of expression of religion.
If Obama wins, you fear you will lose religious freedom. In what form will that take? What will happen?
Well, it's kind of along the lines of, he mentioned federal funding for religious, charitable organizations, things of that nature. And sort of, I believe there was a backdoor measure to dictate what they can and cannot say and proselytize about if he is elected and that passes. And they could.
What if Obama declares homosexuality to be a natural right and homosexual marriage to be by edict acceptable, and that anyone who preaches against homosexuality will be arrested?
Exactly. I believe they have a case.
Do you think that could happen, or is that too far-fetched? Answer, it's happened in Canada. So, yes, it could happen here. Because the original donors to Obama's campaign, the major money that started him off, according to my investigation, was Hollywood money. Hollywood homosexuals were the original donors to the Obama campaign way back when he was unknown. David Geffen and others who are tremendously well-known and tremendously wealthy put up the first money for this guy, according to what I've been able to glean. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. What would you like to talk about? What do you fear most about an Obama victory? Florida, Bill, what do you fear the most about an Obama victory?
First of all, I don't fear. I'm angry. I would say I'm really angry at the prospect that he would even, you know, be running for the presidency. He made a speech. He gave a speech in Germany. He should have never given that speech. He should have never been in Germany. He should have never campaigned worldwide. He's running for the president here in this country, for the presidency here in this country, and he has turned his back on America. Listen to that speech. Anybody that has not heard that speech, listen to the speech.
Well, this is interesting that you bring up his German appearance. I'll tell you why, the appearance in Germany. Because a lot of the donations coming into Obama are shady, and they don't know where they're coming from. I believe that world tour was an attempt to bring in money from abroad under through third, fourth, fifth parties, sort of like the derivatives of fundraising, sort of a Wall Street methodology for bringing in foreign funds into his campaign. So all of the communists, for example, anarchists in Germany, have probably been bundled by German front groups for Obama. Thank you for the call. They're derivative donations, in other words. Could you play something for me, music, already? I feel I'm losing energy. I feel that the ship is starting to founder, and I don't want to eat flounder. And so, therefore, in order to not founder or eat flounder, I need some music of any kind. A dealer's choice. I don't care what it is. That's all. What month is this? I don't even know the month I'm in. October? Hold it. Knock it off. That's June music. That's graduation music. So, okay, no, you could play it. I'll tell you why, because the only issue I'm going to vote on here in California is against gay marriage. So that works, the white sport coat and a pink carnation.
A white sport coat and a pink.
So I'm going to go to an orchid meeting tonight, I think. Making orchids flower. I have an orchid that keeps flowering, and others, you can't get them to come back from the dead. You know that? Everyone has the Phalaenopsis. Everyone knows that. That's the ones that everyone has. The Cattaneas. We all have those. But I remember the years I collected plants. I mean, I had a friend who was a great plant collector, a real botanist, who collected orchids from the mountains of New Guinea. You cannot believe how sturdy and hardy some orchids really are. When you first start looking at orchids, you think that they're frail plants, but they're the exact opposite. They're extremely hardy. I know it's starting to sound like the Queen of Diamonds and Manchurian Candidate where I'm talking about orchids, so I can code now. But yes, girls, the trick to orchid growing can be found in the plant itself. Whether you are a hobbyist or a commercial grower, girls, the important thing to remember is that orchids such as bulbophyllums, which are sought after by serious orchid hobbyists, are not that easy to grow. The bulbophyllum is an orchid that is extremely hardy. And that is why I say, ladies and gentlemen, the hybrid vigor is what you must look for. The cutting edge of orchid growing, girls, is the Queen of Diamonds. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So you see, I was about 16 years old, Queens, New York, and one of the girls in the crowd was, well, she was that way. She was an infomaniac. It was a cold winter's evening. A group of five or six guys took her in a car to Alley Pond Park, and they had their way with her. I was one of the guys in the car, and I did not want my way with her. In fact, I felt bad for her. I didn't know what to do. I was like, I was the idiot, sensitive kid in the back who was laughed at. Like, hey, it's your turn. I said, no, I just don't want to do this. Something's wrong here. So after the guys, these pigs, these animals, most of whom wound up working in the garment center, selling clothing. Some, I think, went into the television business. One went into the record business. Got through with her. The car went back to her house. And here's the whole crux of the story. It's not like laughing about the nymphomaniac in the car. Here's the crux of the story. Car pulls up back in front of her house. And she lived in a nice house. And her father's waiting for her on the lawn of the house with an overcoat. The guys basically throw her out of the car, disheveled and like half naked, laughing, and speed away. And I turn around and see the father walking up to her to cloak her and cover her nakedness with the overcoat. Now, there's so much in that story that needs to be discussed. I don't have the time for it. I have a minute and 15 seconds. What a father. What a great father he was. Now, you'd think a father would scream, "You filthy slut, you, blah, 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 how dare you?" Or he'd come at the car and hit the guys. He didn't do either, did he? He lived with what was. He knew who his daughter was and what her proclivities were. I don't know how she wound up. I mean, maybe she turns out. A lot of people go through these phases, and they, you know, in the woman's side, you know, can straighten out. I mean, I don't know what they become. Maybe a yoga instructor or something later on in life, or if they're a male and they suffer from satiriasis, they become a president, like Bill Clinton, you know. If they suffer the equivalent of nymphomania in male, it's satiriasis, and that can make you into a wonderful president in some cases. But in either case, that's the story of the nymphomaniac at Alley Pond Park. That goes with the song which we're going to play right now on the way out this hour, the Only Have Eyes For You song, Springland, New York. Oh, no, wait a minute. Play the song. Hold on. Okay, now I'm taking it back live. That story is in my great collection, Psychological Nudity, and you can only buy it at michaelsavage.com. I mean, it's a touching story, but the reason I played it today is twofold. One, I want you to understand that in a certain way, that girl's father had character. You may say, well, he should have beaten the guys up or run at them with a shotgun, or he should have beaten his daughter up. I don't know. Maybe he shouldn't have. Maybe he came to understand there was nothing he could do about the way she was. And so he just sheltered her the best he could. You know, I mean, there was dignity there. There was something there that made me remember it all these decades. And that's why I put it in the book Psychological Nudity. I think each story projects a certain character that doesn't exist in America anymore. Maybe that's what I'm getting at. The more I think about this book, Psychological Nudity, the more I realize its value is inherently the value of that book is about the characters in the stories, not just the stories per se, and the kid looking at the world as he grows up, you know, in it. So anyway, you can buy it on my website. It's not available in bookstores. 1-800-449-8255. Let's get down to the election brass tacks or whatever you want to talk about. What do you fear if Obama becomes president? What do you fear the most? Let's say you wake up one day and Al Sharpton's the Supreme Court justice. Or you wake up and the head of the SEC is Jesse Jackson. You know, because look, it will save him a lot of gas money. If he appointed Jesse Jackson as the head of the SEC, the security, instead of Chris Cox, Jackson wouldn't have to hold protests outside the buildings. He'd be inside the buildings, and he could do what Paulson's doing and what Christopher Cox did. So what's the difference? You know, at a certain point, I got to tell you the truth, I don't know how it could get worse. At a certain point, things are so bad right now, I don't know how it could get worse than this. I don't know how it could get worse. I'm never voting for Obama, you got to understand, because he's an Afro-Leninist. He's got every indication of being a dictator. I'll not vote for him for that reason alone. And don't give me the black garbage, please. As I've said 1,000 times, it's not that he's too black, he's too green. He's an unknown quantity, and I'm not going to risk. I'd rather have a crook that I know or an incompetent that I know than an unknown. I'm not turning this great enterprise over to an unknown named Obama, particularly when you look at his friends and his associates and who he'd appoint to various offices. Those are the thoughts going in my mind. You'll never change my mind on him. But McCain is a terrible disappointment. I never had any faith in the man. I never even thought the man could get this far. He's an invention of the Republican, the collapsed Republican machine. That's the best they could do is produce him, because they crushed all of the potential people who could rise up and become a president on the conservative side. So they came up with this hack. Unbelievable to me. But what do you fear the most is what I'd like to know. That's what I'd like to know. San Francisco, Neil on KNEW, go ahead. What do you fear the most about an Obama victory?
Oh, the big fear is that Jesse Jackson will become Secretary of State. But there's a question I want you to consider, Michael. What if Sarah Palin is a gift from God to America? What if she could wind up president and tear them apart?
I don't go into God's hand in this. I'm sorry. I can't go as far as that. But I think they should switch the ticket around. I think if it was Palin for president and McCain for vice president, they'd stand a chance to win. You know, right now, who knows? Who knows? The man was ahead. You get a collapse like this on Wall Street, he's talking about something else. You want to? I got 20 seconds. Here's the speech that knocks him over the top. When I'm elected president, I'll get to the bottom of the Wall Street swindlers. And when I found out who's responsible, I'm going to put them in jail and I'm going to seize their assets and give them back to you, the taxpayer. Bingo, he goes up 10 points. But he hasn't said that yet, has he? Why has McCain not said that yet? I'll let you figure it out. And why has Obama not said that yet? Because both of them were bought out, don't you get it?
Savage.
Raymond.
Yes, sir.
Can you see the Red Queen?
Yes, sir.
Good. 1 week from next Saturday, you will be called for at 11:10 a.m. and taken to the Timothy Swarden Sanitarium, 84 East 61st Street. We want you there for a checkup. Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
You may put the cards away now. Goodbye, Raymond.
That's a scene from The Manchurian Candidate, the original version with Frank Sinatra. Really was a great movie, no question about it. But sometimes you wonder when you see these candidates, how they respond and how their lack of efference sometimes makes it look as though they may be the Manchurian Candidate of somebody or other, because they don't respond properly. They all look like they're on drugs or medication of some kind. By and large, they don't relate to the actualities around them. Here we have a state of California that's bankrupt, and you've got a fraudulent governor named Schwarzenegger, faked it as a Republican when all along he was married into the Kennedy clan. Deficit overwhelms new budget in California. Fine, he says, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're closing down emergency rooms to illegal aliens. We could save $12 billion a year doing that. But he didn't do that. What is he? Who's? Has any of the candidates, have either of the candidates said, when I become president, we're going to crack down on benefits to non-citizens because we can't afford it anymore? 10 points up the next second. No. Both of them are in on the screwing of the American taxpayer again. Why? Because the very same people on Wall Street who control the money supply and control money, who have just robbed this country blind and are getting away with it because they own the politicians who are allegedly investigating them, have told these little puppets called congressmen that we want the illegal aliens here because it's better for our bottom line, because they work for less and we don't have to pay them benefits. And so, therefore, neither of the candidates will discuss saving money by cracking down on benefits for illegal aliens. So we, the people, again, are lost without a candidate. Borders anyone? Language anyone? Culture anyone? Have you heard one cultural question? I heard one. One about when does life begin? But that was so long ago, I don't even remember when it occurred. The next cultural question was about gay marriage. That came up between the vice presidents. Oh, that was a distant, you know, question, somewhat related to culture. Certainly not the most important cultural question on the books. Language? Did any of them raise a question, any of these frauds, like the baggy-eyed Bolshevik from PBS or the woman who asked the questions, whose name I've forgotten already? Did they ask any questions about English only? Where do you stand, Mr. Obama? Where do you stand, Mr. McCain? On English as the official language, didn't come up. Where do you stand on flag burning? Didn't come up. Where do you stand on homosexuals in the military? Didn't come up. The most important questions of our time didn't come up. But today, all the questions have changed to what would you do to find out the guilty on Wall Street? And when they're found out, what would you do to him? See, that should be the first question. That's all that's on my mind. Mr. Obama, if you become president, what would you do to find out who was guilty for this? And if you find out there was any fraudulent activity in violation of SEC rules, will you seize their assets? I mean, that's why they won't come on this show, because they know I'll ask them that. So since it's a game of two-card Monte where there's no P under either card, under either cup, what do I care who wins at this point? But you're still obsessed. If this one wins, that'll happen. If that one wins, that'll happen. You got one side fearing McCain victory and Palin will do this, and the other side fears if Obama wins, that'll do that. Don't you see that it's a game? That's how dictatorships control the people. By creating fear in people on both sides, they create fear in you. So then you play the game. The more frightened you are, the more you play the game. But what do you actually fear about Obama? That's what I'd like to hear what you think. Michael in San Francisco, you're next up. Go ahead, please.
I fear that Obama is a stealth candidate, that Iran will commit nuclear blackmail against the U.S. if Iran bombs Israel. In other words, the United States should not help Israel, and Iran will threaten nuclear warfare against the United States if something like that occurs.
I hear you. I think Israel's lost its ability to defend itself. It should have bombed the Iranian facilities already. Don't you agree with me?
Absolutely.
I feel that the United States has lost its dominance as a world power a long time ago. I don't think it happened under Bush. And I feel that Ahmadinejad should not have been able to leave America. I feel that at the very least, he should have been arrested with all of his mullahs and his security details, and the world would have been spared World War III. Why was that not done? Answer, because the very same evil that we see creeping out of Wall Street, frankly, is involved in dealings with Iran through third parties, mainly through the United Arab Emirates. They're doing business in the billions with Iran, and that's why Ahmadinejad comes here and mocks this country and gets away with it.
Absolutely true. My fear is this might be the last Yom Kippur for the state of Israel.
Well, why doesn't Israel act?
I don't know. Olmert is such a jerk. And
Olmert, he's gone. Olmert has stepped down. Now it's the woman Livni. Why are they not acting? Why is there no attempt to defend themselves anymore? Why have they given up?
Stockholm Syndrome, it's hard to say. It's crazy. They don't realize they have a gun pointed at their head, the hammer is cocked back, and they're already starting to pull the trigger.
Well, what can you do for a country that's become suicidal?
Not much.
That's the sad truth, but is this country far behind, Michael? Is this country not suicidal that we would let these two men of this low caliber, that these men of this low caliber are the only choices in the whole country? These are the only two men who could lead this country out of the morass that it's in? You must be kidding. I mean, I know you don't believe that. I think this country is just as suicidal as Israel. To me, it's the death of the West. We're actually watching the death of the West. Spengler predicted at the beginning of the 19th century, the beginning of the 20th century, he predicted the death of the West, and he wrote a book called The Death of the West. And the fact of the matter is, it's like we're watching the West in its death throes.
It is our death.
That's when I really get depressed. I start to see it in that context, and I hope I'm wrong. Thanks for the call. Dot, 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 dot. What do you fear the most if Obama wins is the question. I think it's a very fair question. Kentucky, Sean, what do you fear about an Obama victory?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm very fearful and absolutely disgusted because, you know, Obama, he spends 20 years in this lunatic racist church, and people just think that that, you know, I mean, how can you sit there for 20 years listening to that guy and not hold some of his beliefs? It's not credible. It's just not credible.
Well, because the media made it sound as though it was an anomaly, and anyone who pointed out Reverend Wright was a racist, but we all know that that's false. In other words, Reverend Wright is the soul of Barack Hussein Obama. You know that, and I know that. And on that note, I think we should play Reverend Wright so you remember who he really is. This is the inner Obama as let out of the box. Listen carefully.
The government gives them the drugs, builds bigger prisons, passes a three-strike law, and then wants us to sing God Bless America? No, no, no. Not God Bless America. God damn America. That's in the Bible for killing innocent people. God damn America for treating our citizens as less than human.
I fear that Obama will stir up a race war. You want to ask me what I fear? I think Obama will empower the racists in this country and stir up a race war in order to seize absolute power. I believe that's what he will do. It will not be as overt as you may think, but it'll be a subtle race war on every level imaginable. What you just heard is the inner Obama, because I wouldn't sit in a synagogue, a church, or any house of worship if the rabbi or the minister was that inflammatorily hateful. I would have gone in and walked out. You sit there for 20 years, he marries you, he baptized, I think he christened the children, and then he says he has no idea why he was there. Is he joking? He sounds just like the corporate executives who say that they feel heartbroken about what happened to their company. I don't believe a word he says. I believe that's the real Obama, and I believe that's what we're going to see if he wins. And the shame of it all is the schmoo on the other side, the schmoo, John McCain, every time he gets up, he congratulates Obama for doing so well. He should get up there and point fingers and say, look, you want us to forget Reverend Wright, but you sat there for 20 years. How can you stand there and tell me that you didn't approve of him. He married. No, but McCain won't do it. McCain is a nice guy. McCain likes Obama more than he does Michael Savage. McCain is part of the system. Obama is the system candidate. He's an organization man. He can as much think his way out of the box as I can become a man thinking inside the box. I can't think like men inside the box. He can't think like men outside the box. And so, therefore, the twain shall never meet. San Diego, Jillian, welcome to the Savage Nation.
I absolutely agree with you as far as the race war goes. I think the greatest thing that concerns me about Obama is his resentment towards this country. I feel that him and his wife feel that they have fought very hard against whites, and that everything that they have, they are entitled to, versus being thankful and feeling privileged for living in this country and what this country has provided in terms of opportunities.
Correct. And affirmative action helped both of them. There's no question about it.
And I
feel and of course, that was because of social engineering on the left side.
I feel that he is, like you said, going to give a voice to all those people who feel resentment towards whites, especially. And it's going
to. Oh, no, I want everyone to strip off all of their social constraints right now on the show. And I want them to get down to the core fear that they have for Obama. I want to hear it on this show, and I thank you. And you can call me at 1-800-449-8255. Don't hold anything back. I mean, I don't want you to go over the top with language that I can't run. I want you to call this show and tell me what you fear about Barack Hussein Obama as president. Mississippi Ann, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. I don't fear anything about an Obama presidency. I think he would be a wonderful president. From the very beginning, I don't know if America has forgotten, but from the very beginning, this man has talked about bringing America together.
Really? And would you think that his reverend would indicate that he's the kind of man who brings people together?
His no. Now, I will agree there. His reverend is whacked out. There's no doubt. Oh,
so have you ever asked yourself why he sat in that church for 20 years? Doesn't that concern you?
Well, that the sermons that were spoken, that they aired on TV, they back-checked, and he was not in there. Now, granted.
Oh, he was out those days. He was given advance notice. I see. He wasn't there those days. Those were special days.
You need a
now, how about the fact that we learned today that volunteers supporting Barack Obama picked up hundreds of people at homeless shelters, soup kitchens, and drug rehab centers, and drove them to a polling place yesterday in the last day that Ohioans could register and vote on the same day, no questions asked. Does that sound like a fair effort to you?
Yes, sir, because a lot of those voters voted for McCain. They had interviewed a couple of those.
Oh, I see. So, in other words, you would think that homeless and drug addicts would vote for McCain?
They did. One homeless man they interviewed, and I saw it. And he voted for McCain because he liked
him. Well, you're a very, very skilled Obama worker, I'll tell you, Ann. You're good. You're really good. You could work for me any day. So you're a very, very good worker for Obama. You've got an answer for everything. Unfortunately, they're not true.
IQ of 172. Let somebody with intelligence run the country.
Oh, really? So you think it's only about intelligence, not about character?
His character is just fine with me.
Well, what has Obama done that evidences a fine character? He has no experience other than being a community organizer, which is stapling posters to bulletin boards and raising money and threatening companies with lawsuits if they don't give them money. That's your idea of good character?
I think Obama's character with regards to Reverend Wright, William Ayers, all of that, if you dug into every politician's background.
We're only talking about the man you say is the best for the country for the moment. Then you're going to take us off point here in an attempt to distract us. But you admit that there are problems.
Pardon?
No, don't start in with the game, please. You heard me. You heard me very clearly. You know that those are problems for Obama.
And to say
what about all the money that's been coming from foreign sources for Obama? That doesn't bother you either?
Has that been proven to be a fact?
Yes, it's been proven. He had to give money back to Palestinians, 39,000 Palestinians. Okay. Now, why would so many Palestinians like Obama?
Well, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
Why? It's not in your talking points?
No, it's not.
Thank you for the call. I'm glad you admitted it finally. That's all. San Francisco, I got callers now on what you fear about Obama, and I'll take them right as soon as I come back in the Savage Nation.
Savage.
When did it all change in America? When did the ship start to take on water? You know, I go back a while in the country, so my first memory of a president would be Dwight Eisenhower, Supreme Commander of the Allies in World War II. I mean, there was a guy that I think everybody looked up to. I know he had his flaws because he's human. He's not God. But in terms of a man you had faith in, Dwight Eisenhower to me was, I don't know, we all looked up to him. Even Democrats loved Dwight D. Eisenhower. You then had other presidents along the way, and you say, well, where did the downturn begin? LBJ was a corrupt president, we know that, and his presidency ended in a disaster. Nixon was a game player. His presidency was almost a socialist-communist presidency in a strange way. I know you don't want to accept that, but Nixon was not a conservative. He allegedly was a conservative, but he brought in the Americans with Disabilities Act. He opened the door to communist China. In other words, everything, I even remember writing this when I was a kid, that everything that we were taught to fear would happen if communists took over America happened under Nixon. I wrote that when I was 18 years old. I distinctly remember that, under Nixon. Then you go to Kennedy. Well, Kennedy was a conservative Democrat. By today's standards, he would be a rock-rib right-wing conservative compared to John McCain, for example. I'd vote for John F. Kennedy today. But he doesn't exist. And remember, John F. Kennedy was a real war hero. Don't ever forget that. But you're not going to compare Obama to John F. Kennedy. I mean, don't put them in the same category. They're not in the same universe. Let's go down the list. Keep going to the next and the next and the next. Gerald Ford was a nun president. He was sort of a nun president. I don't mean to degrade him, but he was a nun president. He was a factotum. So who stands out? Ronald Reagan came along. He had his flaws. He did great things. He also did horrible things, and I know many of you don't want to hear it, but he did. And I don't want to, you know, spend my time debasing Ronald Reagan. Let's leave the memories as good. But he was not a perfect man in any way. He did a lot of real harm to certain sectors of this society, mainly the farmers. I'll never forget it because I remember many of them were committing suicide as they were being thrown off the family farm. That was the conglomeration of the agribusiness community. Under Ronald Reagan, so the things were not as perfect as you may think. Let's go along, and not in a consecutive order necessarily. I can't remember all of the presidents in exact order, but the ones that pop into my mind who have to mention Clinton and debase him, we know who he was. He was Caligula. Caligula, who invaded Serbia illegally, illegal war. Not only did he invade Serbia in an illegal war under the guise of a genocide that was actually being committed on both sides, there were Serbs who had been killed. In masses. There were 250,000 Serbs driven out of their ancestral homes. Kosovo became a hotbed of Islamic fundamentalism under the Kosovo Liberation Army. And Bill Clinton took the side of the Kosovo Liberation Army and repainted American warplanes with NATO markings and acted as a Hessian force for hire for the NATO alliance. He did not even use American warplanes. And so Bill Clinton was an absolutely evil man, one of the most evil men in history. Then, of course, do I have to mention the man who followed him? We've had 8 years of a disaster. So we've gone from one disaster to another. The true downturn began with Bill Clinton. We've had almost 16 years now of Clinton Bush, and the country is totally destroyed and gutted. There's nothing left of the economy. There's nothing left of national honor. There's nothing left of faith in government. This is the result of 16 years of Clinton Bush. Well, what's coming? God only knows. And only God can save this country. It cannot be. McCain isn't going to save this country. Obama certainly wouldn't save this country. So who's going to save it? Maybe we, the people, will save it. What does that mean? I don't know. I'll have to think about it. What power do we have? Very, very little. We have had our victories. Perhaps we'll have a few more in the very near future. Let me think about it.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I know everyone wants to hear about the debate and the this and the that. Yeah, we're all looking forward to it. But we all know what to expect already in advance. And I have no faith that McCain is going to come out swinging. I think he's just basically given up already. And I have to tell you, it's heartbreaking. Not that he's the greatest candidate, but all right, it would have taken him over Obama. But then you see what goes on Wall Street, and he says nothing fundamentally. I told you, you give me 30 seconds. I write him a speech, a 10-second speech, 20-second speech. His numbers go up 8 to 10 points overnight. What would the speech be? When I'm president, I will get to the bottom of who robbed, who built America. When we find out who did this and we find out where the wrongdoing is, we're going to seize their assets and we're going to put them away in prison for a very long period of time. I'm John McCain and I approve of this message. But he hasn't said that. And by the way, the other guy hasn't said it either. Why? Why? Because they both got campaign contributions along the years from the very people who were sitting up there like Humpty Dumpty. See, but in order for Humpty Dumpty to have a great fall, someone's got to push him off the wall. That's what the government's supposed to do. But Humpty is as fat as the egg ever was, and Humpty's very happy. Well, I have some good news for me. I hope it's good news for you. I just got an email minutes ago, and I learned from the printer that my new book, Psychological Nudity, will be shipping this week, Wednesday or Friday. That is, I can't wait. I really, this is my baby. I'm going to get a copy by overnight. You'll get it in about 2.5 weeks. That goes from the printer to the fulfillment house in Florida. Then they send it to you. All you people who ordered them, you're going to get them in time for the holidays. So I cannot wait to see this beautiful hardcover edition. This is the first book in my life that I've actually picked the hardcover, what it should look like, the typesetting, the interior design, the cover from beginning to end. I've never had so much fun developing a book in my whole life. Normally, you write the book and the rest is not up to you. So I am really looking forward to getting this. Right now, we'll go back to the question of the day on the Savage Nation, which is, what do you fear the most should Obama win the presidency? Ohio, Teray, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead. What do you fear the most?
Well, there's two things. The first being the universal or socialized health care. Anybody who thinks that's a good idea just needs to go spend some time in a VA hospital and see how our government runs their health care, and they'll know.
Let's pause right here. We all know that we fear socialized medicine and its great costs and its inefficiencies and the degradation of medical care. Then why have we let George Bush write a check for $48 billion as near as 5 weeks ago to Africa for health care in Africa under the, you know, for AIDS in Africa? That's health care, isn't it?
Well, yes, and we, the American people, didn't do it. We, the politicians who are really putting the shaft to the American people, did it.
No, George Bush wrote a check for $48 billion to Africa for health care. How could he do that when we were going broke? He must have known we didn't have the money. He has a printing press. That's his greatest economic tool ever.
Yeah, and, you know, they say, oh, well.
So you fear wealth redistribution under Obama. What would you call the wealth redistribution that just occurred on Wall Street, where these pigs took billions of dollars for themselves and their friends while their companies were going down? Isn't that a Marxism for the rich?
Absolutely. They're a bunch of thieves, and every one of them should be prosecuted. You know,
all right, do you actually believe there will be any prosecutions?
No, not at all. Uncle Sam has his hand so deep in my pocket that he's pulling up my socks, and he's asking for more.
So Uncle Sam has become a crook, and the Statue of Liberty has been ravished and raped, and she's crying, and thank you. What imagery. That's if you were a cartoonist, that's all. But take a look at who we're arguing over. You know, it's Humpty Dumpty here. Steve in San Francisco, you're next up. Go ahead, please.
Yes, the thing that bothers me most, Dr. Savage, about Obama is the fact that so many people in this country fall for this propaganda that's put out there by the mainstream media and all the things going on, trying to register possibly underage voters, this ACORN thing, possible vote fraud, voting fraud, and it seems like nobody seems to care. Nobody does.
Well, why doesn't McCain raise that issue tonight? Why doesn't he talk about illegal aliens voting in the election, destroying the integrity of the voting booth? Wouldn't that be a great opportunity for John McCain to take leadership?
I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen tonight because I remember McCain.
No, but if McCain knows this is going on, why doesn't he go on the attack tonight? You know he won't. You know he's already been gelded. I mean, it's a terrible thing to say. The guy's a former Navy pilot. He's acting like a waiter in an old age home. In 30 seconds, we're going to take a break. And then we're going to Ken Timmerman on media bias for Obama, which is right up the discussion's alley where we are right now. We're going to talk about how NBC in particular is virtually a campaign platform for Barack Hussein Obama. What should I tell you to do? Not to buy General Electric light bulbs? You won't buy a GE light bulb if I tell you not to? Huh. Good luck. Good luck. This is the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere. Savage. We all know about the left-wing bias in the media, the far-left maniacs, especially now in the time of the Messiah, Obama. Not only do they follow the Messiah around like a rock star or cover up his past and his acquaintances, but now they're even rewriting history to push their manufactured candidate into the White House. Ken Timmerman from Newsmax.com joins us today to talk about the latest candidate profiles by NBC's Nightly News. Ken Timmerman, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Thanks, Michael, for having me on tonight.
Ken, give us some background on what's going on.
Well, Michael, look, the NBC is so far in the tank for Barack Obama, it's not funny. They recently did a series of profiles, one on Obama, one on John McCain. And as you kind of look through the profiles and examine them carefully, it is so obvious that they are just trying to show Barack Obama in a positive light and McCain in a negative one. The one on McCain ran just about a week ago, and they sent a film crew to Vietnam to interview people that had known John McCain when he was a prisoner of war in Vietnam. They didn't talk to McCain. They didn't talk to any of the POWs who had been with him, the U.S. soldiers and airmen, the airmen who had been with him in the Hanoi Hilton. They talked to the former jailer at the Hanoi Hilton. Now, in NBC's rendition of this, Michael, the jailer is just a kind of happy-go-lucky, nice man who remembers playing cards with John McCain. He can't seem to remember torturing him.
How convenient.
He now says, well, we played cards and John McCain taught me English. They also interview an 81-year-old former nurse who claims that she helped save McCain's life. She put splints on his broken arms and legs and gave him antibiotics when he was shot down. But in fact, if you go back and read McCain's autobiography, you find out that that didn't happen quite that way. In fact, after McCain was shot down, he was tortured for about 4 days until he thought he was going to break. He was about to die. He was running a high fever. And ultimately, the only reason the North Vietnamese didn't just let him die was because they discovered that his father was an admiral. And they wanted to save him so they could use him against the United States of America, something that McCain didn't allow to happen.
This is coming out of NBC's news group. Usually their bias isn't quite as obvious. What's going on at NBC?
Well, this was actually, Michael, a pretty carefully crafted show. They didn't, you know, come out openly and say that, that McCain's story about his years as a prisoner of war was exaggerated. But underneath it all, you could hear and feel this bias. The message was America's bad, heroic North Vietnam is good. Here are these heroes who helped John McCain, and McCain was there bombing the North Vietnamese. I mean, this is pure 60s and 70s drivel that we're hearing from NBC.
Well, what did NBC do for Obama's profile?
Well, with the Obama profile, they sent a team to Indonesia, and here their message was very simple. Again, it was a subtext of the actual profile they did, they were trying to convince you that Barack Hussein Obama was not a Muslim and had never been brought up a Muslim, never went to a Muslim school. So they go to the school where he was in Indonesia as a young boy from 6 to 10, and they interview people who knew him at that time. And they say, oh, well, you know, yes, they taught Islamic studies, but it wasn't very important, and, you know, it was a state school, and, you know, all of this stuff, the subtext, Barack Obama is not a Muslim. That's what they were trying to get across.
How does a so-called news group owned by General Electric get slanted so badly, yet nobody is speaking out and demanding the truth from these people?
It's really extraordinary, Michael. Here is a candidate for the highest office in the world, and there are entire chapters of his past which remain obscure. We don't know really much about Barack Obama's childhood in Indonesia. We don't know whether he traveled around the world in 1981 as a student in Colombia on an Indonesian passport, or whether he had a U.S. passport. We don't even know for sure that he's a United States citizen. There's a lawsuit underway in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, about that. We don't know who paid for his law school in Harvard. We don't know how he got into Harvard, who recommended him. We don't know a lot of things about Barack Obama's past, even his association with William Ayers, the former SDS weatherman terrorist. Obama and his campaign people are trying to downplay that association. But, in fact, the two of them were closely tied together from 1995 until 2002, just a couple of years ago. They sat on the same board in Chicago where Obama doled out millions of dollars to left-wing organizations run by the former SDS terrorist Bill Ayers.
With all that we don't know about Obama and all that we do know about McCain, it looks like they're rewriting history in order to get the chosen one in office.
I think John McCain needs to level with the American people, give us a little straight talk tonight, and say to Mr. Obama, you know, how can you expect the American people to trust you when you don't tell the truth about the simple things of your own past? How can they possibly trust you on complicated things that are yet to come?
But is McCain going to be strong enough to stand up and say what he needs to say? I don't think so. I don't need to ask the question. I can tell you he won't.
Look, John McCain spent 5.5 years as a prisoner of war in North Vietnam. They were torturing him virtually every day that he was there, and they would drag him in, kicking and screaming as he protested, into the torture chambers. This man is tough. He's been through it many times. I really don't think he's going to have an awful hard time standing up to the likes of Barack Obama.
Ken Timmerman, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Thanks, Michael, for having me on. Now we can all watch the debate.
Here was the diet of the young savage. Now, mind you, it was meant because the parents came from a relatively, you know, impoverished background. I am very proud of that because they rose up. So what do poor people do when they get a little money? They feed themselves, and they feed themselves holiday foods 3 times a day. Everything that they would eat at a holiday when they were children, they gave their children for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So a typical breakfast would be ham and eggs, maybe 4 eggs, maybe a brick of ham. I'm not talking a slice. I'm talking Canadian bacon size, the size of at least your pinky. Ham and eggs, dripping the eggs, glass of milk. You had the 12 ounces of milk. And then a jelly donut to go to school with. Immediately, I had narcolepsy. And the minute I hit the classroom, zzz. Michael, what is, 2 plus 5? I had no idea. It was a drowsy. Thank God it snowed in my face. It woke me up just on the walk to school. But the minute I got there and took off the scarf, I got so drowsy from the heaters in the school, I went right to sleep. The next thing I knew, someone shook me, and it was lunchtime. Lunchtime, ring, ring, lunchtime, recess, meatloaf sandwich from the night before, some type of potato dish that was congealed. In order for travel, for eating in haste, some kind of type of congealed potato dish that was stuck together like with mortar, you know, beaten with a mortar and pestle with some kind of glue. It wasn't just a potato, you know, which is good for you. We're talking about glued potatoes. That was it. That was dinner. 5 o'clock, the early show. And there I was in front of the TV with a tray and steak, French fries, ice cream. And poor dad would come in the door around. I was still eating at 6 o'clock, mind you. He came home gray from the winter, from working, from worrying over his son who was going to become everything that he hated. And my mother's like slaving over him, catering. Seriously, I'm just telling you point blank what the upbringing. He comes in white from the day. And I see his eyes dart right over to the empty tray steak, the leftover fries. I was like the young King Farouk in the making. I was on the ice cream. Yeah, Ma, I'll have another one. All right, yeah, get me a kitchen there. Knock, go get me another one. Oh, we were terrible kids, so spoiled. Because they wanted some food like that. What are you waiting on? All right, you're coming to work with me on Saturday. No, I don't want to go down in that basement. Yeah, you're going to clean bronzes again. You and the Bowery bum, I pay 75 cents a week. You're going to go down there with the, and you'll clean those bronzes and you'll know what it is to be a man. I'm looking at clothes that you wear out here, you and your friends. What do you mean, Dad? We're just wearing clothing that is not black or gray. Never mind. Ah, come on, I go on and on. And it's absolutely true. And that's the way it was. Okay, but the point of the story is this went on for years and years and years. Now, if I were conducting human experiments and it was legal, I wouldn't do it to anybody. But if I wanted to conduct an experiment on what causes early death from coronary artery disease, that diet would be the model. That would be the epidemiologic model. You'd take somebody and put them in a prison, and you'd feed them the exact diet three times a day. For 5 years, you can induce a heart attack in a seven-year-old, I think, with that diet. So there must be a little bit more to it. You understand that there's got to be three parts to any disease pattern: diet or the environment, genes, and then there's another factor. There's whatever else you do, and a little luck thrown in the unknown. I'm still ticking along here. Thank God I caught on to it young. Thank God I went to, you know, I left New York. I looked for the Fountain of Youth. I did the Ponce de Leon thing. And I investigated nutrition early on. First nutrition book I ever read was George Osawa's Zen Macrobiotics, the number 12 diet, brown rice. There's a diet that it will definitely give you longevity, but you don't want it. There's no reason to live. When you hit the number 12 diet, and they all got sick anyway. It was all a lie. All the guys who practiced those extreme diets, they all died of, like, liver cancer at 40. You ever noticed how many guys who were, oh, yeah, I'm a vegetarian years ago, a runner? They're all dead. The purists. I never touch animal products. I don't eat any fish, fowl, nothing from the sea. I do not touch dairy. I'm a lacto-ovo humanitarian, vegetarian, Unitarian. Barry Obama has obviously been anointed by the midstream media as the next president of the United States of Germany. The midstream media ignores or glosses over any stories or any problems that come up when we look at his voting records, his personal connections, his pastor. The story of Obama's minister is well known, and you've heard about the connections to the far leftist groups like the Weathermen. What a lot of people haven't heard about is Barry Obama's Marxist mentor and Communist Party member Frank Marshall Davis, which the midstream media has passed off as a writer who offered a young Obama advice on life. Ha ha! Cliff Kincaid from Accuracy and Media tells us more about this cover-up by the midstream media. Cliff, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on again.
Well, what's the background on this actual story?
There's no secret that the media are pro-Obama and want to see him elected, but the degree of their support in terms of blatant dishonesty is shocking to many people. What I've documented in this particular article at AIM.org is the fact that the Associated Press, which is a wire service that reaches millions of people, has published a blatantly dishonest story about Barack Obama's communist mentor, a man named Frank Marshall Davis. We actually broke this story many months ago, and it's belatedly been the case that AP is now running a story about this important influence on Barack Obama's life. But the problem is they did a lengthy story about Frank Marshall Davis, who was Obama's mentor during his high school years, and never mentioned that he was a communist. He was, in fact, a member of the Communist Party USA, a key member of a Soviet-sponsored international communist network in Hawaii, He was a mentor, a major influence, a role model, a father figure for Barack Obama. And yet AP does this long story about him, ignoring the fact that he's a communist, and quoting all these people, friends and associates of his, and he died back in 1987, saying, in effect, how much of a great guy he was and how he was a positive influence on Barack Obama and was committed, quote, to social justice. Well, this is just another example of the outrageous pro-Obama media bias that is going to mislead and confuse millions of people about who Barack Obama is and where he came from.
This communist was such a huge influence on Obama. How come we haven't heard about him more in Obama's book?
This is a big question that only Barack Obama can ask. AP, the wire service, didn't bother to even raise it. They do mention in the story that Barack Obama, in his 1995 book, Dreams from My Father, refers to this guy, but he only refers to him as Frank. It doesn't even give his readers his complete name. Frank Marshall Davis certainly doesn't mention he was a communist. Talks about him reading poems and giving him Barack Obama advice on various things like American values and college and race relations. But Barack Obama never mentions that Frank was Frank Marshall Davis. And when we confirmed this, we confirmed who this guy actually was many months ago. I actually commissioned a major report on this subject by Herbert Romerstein, a veteran anti-communist investigator. And we looked into Davis's background. He was an identified member of the Communist Party. He was a Stalinist. He supported the evil Soviet regime. This is a very bad person. And yet this is the guy who was picked by Barack Obama's white grandfather, Stanley Dunham, to be Barack Obama's mentor. Because, as we all know, Obama's father had abandoned the family. So Frank Marshall Davis filled that void. This is a key guy in his life who pumped Barack Obama's head full of anti-American thoughts and ideas. And this influence helps explain why later on Barack Obama would associate with Marxists and socialists in college, go to Reverend Jeremiah Wright's church, launch his political career in the home of communist terrorists Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn, and take, in general, a Marxist view on domestic, social, and global issues.
Well, it does explain a lot about Barry Obama.
Davis is the key to understanding Obama. And yet Obama covered up his true identity in his book, and the AP doesn't even try to get to the bottom of it. Instead, they run this blatantly dishonest piece by a Honolulu reporter for AP, a guy named Sudhin Thanawala, who completely ignores the fact. And we have provided him information about this, by the way. We provided him the Romerstein report. We provided him all the information we have. And yet this reporter ignores all of it, ignores all of the evidence, and completely ignores the fact in his story that Davis was an identified member of the Communist Party. This is how dishonest AP has become. And at the same time, by ignoring this evidence, they excuse Barack Obama's dishonesty as well.
The depth of the cover-up in the midstream media is beyond even my comprehension. How did Obama become the chosen one?
It's no secret we've got a liberal left bias in the major national media in this country. This is a bias that we at Accuracy and Media have documented going back for decades. They want to see Obama win. They naturally, almost like clockwork, want to see the Democratic candidates win, especially on a national basis, and especially Obama. I mean, you look at this guy. His campaign strategist is David Axelrod, who used to work for the Chicago Tribune as a, quote, political reporter. His main spokesperson is Linda Douglas, formerly of CBS News, ABC News, and the National Journal. This guy is surrounded by the media who love him. They are on his payroll, and those who are not on his payroll might as well be. Or maybe they're doing it for free. I don't know what their motive is, but they want to see him elected to the point of denying the American people absolutely documented information that a Communist Party member, a key member of a Soviet-sponsored international communist network in Hawaii, was a decisive influence over Barack Obama.
Well, how big of a scandal is this Davis story to Barry Obama's campaign?
I think the Davis story is the biggest one of all. This is the biggest scandal of the campaign so far. And it's not just a scandal for Obama. It's a scandal for the press corps, which continue to try to cover it up. Because Davis explains why Obama would associate with communists and socialists later in life. It was Davis who had the influence over Obama during his formative high school years. And we had confirmed this months ago. We've been trying to get this story out for months. I've done work through Accuracy and Media. The Obama campaign has tried to ignore it until now we get the AP, the wire service, running this blatantly dishonest piece trying to picture Frank Marshall Davis as just some kind of a positive influence on Obama, somebody committed to social justice who was merely, quote, left-leaning and a, quote, journalist and a poet. Well, let me tell you how much of a journalist this guy was. He was a propagandist for the Communist Party, who wrote for the Communist Party-controlled newspaper in Hawaii, the Honolulu Record. And in terms of being a poet, he wrote poems in honor of the Soviet Red Army and mocking Christian missionaries. That's the kind of, quote, poet this guy was. And so this guy is critical to understanding how Obama turned out later in life, why he would go to Wright's Church, why he would associate with terrorists and communists and socialists in Chicago. This is the key to understanding Barack Obama, and that's why this is a blockbuster of a story that AP Now, with distribution to thousands and thousands of print and electronic outlets in the United States and internationally, is trying to obscure and to confuse people about who Frank Marshall Davis really was. I repeat, I provided this reporter direct documentary evidence in the form of the reports that we did at usasurvival.org proving Davis was a communist, proving he had a history of involvement not only in the Communist Party but various communist front organizations over the period of many, many years before, during, and after World War II. I gave all of this information to this reporter, and he deliberately ignored it, and instead, in his story, only quotes those who are supporters of or friends of Davis or Obama.
Cliff Kincaid, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
It was good to be with you. Thanks a million.
Savage.
The Savage Nation, and of course, here we are again, and we're going to go back before the debate to the collapse on Wall Street, I should say, the biggest swindle in the history of the world, and one crook after another who took out billions and billions of dollars for their friends and for themselves comes up and gives a speech and then says they're heartbroken. Thus far, no one has been arrested. No one. Now, here's the former AIG CEO, says he's heartbroken over the failure of AIG. It came out today that as the company was going down, he gave out $10 billion in bonuses, gave himself a $10 million bonus, and listen to clip two.
I've spent my entire adult life in service to AIG, and I am heartbroken as to what has happened. I hope to see the company, and indeed the entire global economy, emerge from this crisis.
See, nice British voice, even though he's from Australia, clean cut, nice suit, clean white shirt, perfect tie. Limousine took him there, clean as a whistle. You wouldn't confuse him with a bad man, would you? No, a bad man is perhaps someone in dirty clothing. A bad man is somebody in dirty clothing who's a little disheveled. A bad man is probably not a white man, for sure. I mean, it couldn't be a white male. Yeah, well, these are all white males. I mean, you'll notice that. You haven't missed that one yet, have you? And yet we're told to fear someone other than the white corporate executive. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not bashing corporate executives because I know some very good ones. Of course, they run their own companies. They don't work for public companies. How have so many crooks taken over so many public companies when the government is supposed to regulate public companies is the whole question, which is why we're having hearings. Of course, nothing will come of it because they've seeded both sides of the aisle with so much money over so many years that you can guarantee it, none of them will pay a dime back. Now, interestingly enough today, Elijah Cummings, a Democrat, asked Martin Sullivan about a week-long conference that AIG executives held after the bailout. Listen to clips 3 and 4.
The week after the bailout, executives from AIG's main U.S. life insurance subsidiary, AIG American General, held this week-long conference at an exclusive resort in California. Are you all familiar? Are you familiar with that at all?
I am not.
All righty. Let me give you a sense of how exclusive the resort was. Rooms started at $425. Some cost as much as $1,200. We contacted the resort, and we got a copy of the bill. AIG spent $200,000. $200,000, Mr. Sullivan, for rooms, and $150,000 for banquets. They spent the $23,000 for the hotel spa. Of course, that was for their pedicures, manicures, facials, massages, and whatever they do in the spa. And they spent about $1,400 at the salon, but they spent $7,000 on something very, very important, that is green fees at the golf course. And then I'm not even sure what this charge means, but my colleagues tell me that the $10,000 for leisure dining was for drinking.
That was after the bailout, which is chicken feed when you really add it up, less than $500,000. He gave himself a $10 million bonus as the ship was going down, and $10 billion apparently over the 3-4 months before, in the last quarter, before the ship crashed and went down. What is amazing to me, though, is that my understanding of the collapse of insurance giant AIG was known. It was known to be coming by the executives, and they lied to the public, which is a clear violation of federal rules. Listen to clip one. Representative Betty McCollum, Democrat, Minnesota, on the collapse.
AIG didn't suddenly collapse and need to be bailed out on September 18th.
Yeah.
AIG's financial situation had been growing increasingly dire with each passing quarter. But AIG's executives kept telling shareholders that their finances were in great shape. And in fact, Mr. Chair, I'd like to submit a New York Times article dated September 28th, which enumerates time and time again how these people said AIG was in great shape. In December 2007, for example, Mr. Sullivan told AIG investors, quote, "We believe we have a remarkable business platform with great prospects that represent tremendous value." 2 months later, AIG posted $5.3 billion losses for the quarter. February 2008, Mr. Sullivan said, "Based on our most current analysis, we believe any credit impairment loss realized over time by AGIFP would not be material to AGI's consolidated financial condition." Then AGI posted $7.8 billion in losses for that quarter. On May 28th, Mr. Sullivan told investors, "The underlying fundamentals of our core business remain solid." The next month, the board voted to replace Mr. Sullivan.
But not after he gave, not before he gave himself a $10 million bonus. And apparently $10 billion was given out in bonuses and whatnot to friends before the company went under. So what do you make of all of this? Why do you suppose the American people are disenamored of the political class? Do you think that either candidate will actually do anything about this? I don't. I truly don't, because I told you that they've received campaign donations from all of these corporate guys over the last few years. So I've disengaged from this election entirely. I have no desire to even spend one more minute on it. I am exhausted from these frauds. I am exhausted from the media. I could care less about this election. Whichever way it goes, it's no good for us. Houston, Texas, AJ, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, neither one of us know Michael Corleone, but you know what? I got to go with McCain, baby. I'm a black man, and I'm going to tell you something. This is not no time for that. And I'm going to tell you, this man will be a destruction to our world and what we stand for. I would never go in nobody else's country and talk about our boys that died for them suckers over there, and still he's going to tell we made a mistake? Mike, Come on, mate. What kind of a commander-in-chief is that going to be? You know, you was telling we made a mistake and we saved y'all. You be talking German right
so
now.
So you fear that Obama's an outright traitor in plain English?
Man, that man, I wouldn't ever do that. That's treason.
All right. Well, there you go. There's a man who speaks the truth. AJ, right up front, you're getting a free copy of Psychological Nudity. All you got to do is name one story you can't wait to read in approximately 2.5 weeks. Which story is it?
Michael, I think I just want to be surprised. I ain't going to lie to you. I'm not the kind of guy that'll lie.
All right, hold on, because you don't lie, you get a free copy. Stay in the line. AJ gets a copy. If you want to see the 75 stories, go to michaelsavage.com. When the site is back up, right now it's having a little trouble. What do you fear if Obama wins? Florida, Bill, you're next up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead. What do you fear?
Michael, I've listened to you for years. I really love you. Say, I've got some real fears here, a long list that I've got. I suppose it all ties back into one thing here, and that's our freedom of speech. With his campaigns and attacks against authors of biographies and calling up radio stations and the possibility of him getting in, and then the Fairness Doctrine, with that being passed.
Do you think the Republicans would not pass the Fairness Doctrine?
What was that, sir?
Do you think that McCain and the Republicans would oppose a Fairness Doctrine?
You know, I fear that is a possibility, but I think it's less of a possibility. I think he might.
Why is it that issue has not come up? Why has no one asked them about illegal immigrants? Why has no one asked McCain or Obama about the Fairness Doctrine, so-called, which would be the end of free speech? Why has nobody asked them about so many things? The answer is because it's all a fix. The entire election is a fix. There's not an honest question being asked by one moderator. Look at who they're picking. PBS, NBC, ABC, all of the hacks. All the hacks that nobody trusts. And McCain will not come on. Forget my show. He won't go on Rush Limbaugh's show. He won't go on other conservative shows. What does that tell you about McCain? Unless this man understands that without my audience, without Rush's audience, he's toast. He's toast. That's my opinion. And if McCain gets up tonight, as I'm sure he will in a few minutes, and start in with, I want to thank Obama for being such a wonderful person with such a nice outfit and suit. And I want to thank Kentucky. And Mr. McCain, you're not in Kentucky. Well, wherever we are, it's over. Unless he becomes a fighter pilot, it's over.
Savage.